ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Let's talk a little sport now. And we do once again have Tolstoy himself, Ken Peace, Australia's, one of Australia's most published sports authors, sitting in for Warwick Hadfield. And Ken, I've got to say, cricket and tennis sharing the centre stage from Sunday. We've got the fifth and final cricket test beginning, weather permitting, at the cricket ground in Sydney. Forecast, not flash, for day one and two. Brisbane International featuring wildcard Nick Kyrgios begins on Sunday. We don't know where to begin, but how are you? It's very good to have you back on Nightlife.
Life's very, very good, Nick. So thanks so much for after the audition last week, and you've taken me on again. I've been to the cricket now. We're talking, everyone. This should be day five of the test match, but it finished in Melbourne in just 2 days. And so many people are disappointed. We really feel let down. The TV, Boxing Day ratings, Nick, 6.3 million Aussies watched. So I'm not that good on the math, but it's almost one in four, one in five. So it really was captivating people. And it was pretty exciting, but the standard of cricket, thanks to the very, very poor wicket, the pitch was spruced up abnormally, seam and bounce, and none of the batsmen could handle it. In the end, they just decided to go the old-fashioned tonk, and it made a short test match, which was so disappointing for all of us, because this was cricket's grand final event. The MCG, 95,000 plus day one, more than 90 again day two, and it was a sellout for day three. They would have got 60 for day four. So it was very disappointing. Don't take anything away from England, mind you.
No.
They deserved their victory. And now it's 3-1. You never know. After Sydney, it could be 3-2. So suddenly we've got a close series again.
Well, given the last week when we were talking, the domination that we were seeing from Australia, it was quite the reversal. And you touched on it, but that Boxing Day test, MCG pitch, unsatisfactory. I mean, what were the dramas there?
Well, it really undermined what had been such a great year for Melbourne in sport. But the weather for earlier in the week in Melbourne was meant to be ferociously hot. It was. The curator hoped that the game could get past the first 2 days and then the pitch would settle down again. So he allowed an extra 3 mil of grass on the wicket. And he had done the same in the test match, the Ashes test match, 4 years ago. But the weather had been very capricious leading up. And instead of being the old-fashioned road, good for batting and okay for bowling too, we got this spruced-up wicket, as I was saying, and it was just diabolical, and some of the deliveries, they were unplayable for the batsmen. I talked to Greg Chappell about that. We've done a book called The Greg Chappell Chronicles, which is available right now. It's been actually a Christmas bestseller, my book number 91. But he was saying that the batsmen were equally culpable as the curator because they just didn't show it the old-fashioned Australian G&D and get behind the ball and play for their lives. Australia had won the series, so maybe they were just a little bit off their game. Let's hope they can be on their game from Sunday for the fifth and final test match, which will be Usman Khawaja's farewell.
Will it be his farewell? Are we sure about that?
Oh, yeah. He's 39 and he's batting from memory, Nick. He's had a really good go. He surprisingly got back into the team only when Steve Smith couldn't play in mid-series for a test match. And while he did very well in that test match, he was back, unfortunately, to almost a double failure in Melbourne, albeit he got 29 in the first innings in a low-scoring game. Yes, it will be his last game, but he'll be so deeply missed. So I know you're getting to love cricket, Nick, but like a Mark Waugh, he was a stylist. And if you knew that Usman was going to make a century, you would stop everything. You'd call off golf with your best mates, your Christmas party. You'd get to the SCG to watch him bat. He was that good. So I'm really hoping he can go out on a really high note because he's been a magnificent ambassador for cricket.
Do you think his legacy is very secure? Like, will he be remembered in the annals of cricket?
Not necessarily, Nick, especially he had a real rocky first 20 or 25 test matches. He would have been dropped five or six times. So not too many champions get dropped that often. But at the start of this calendar year, he got a double century, 232 in Sri Lanka. So he can still seriously play even at the age of 38 and 39. He isn't going to go down as a true great alongside Chappell and Harvey and Smith and Bradman, some of these legendary names in Australian cricket. But I tell you what, for a boy who came from Pakistan, age seven, no one wanted to be him, Nick. Mm. He couldn't use knife and fork. No one wanted to help him. He really was an outsider, and yet he was able to play local cricket alongside a young David Warner in the eastern suburbs of Sydney, and he blossomed into such a magnificent person and player. So he's really been one of my all-time favourites. Not a champion, but not far off.
Oh, I like the way you called him an ambassador for the game, because I think that kind of goes to just how much he sparked a lot of interest in people that may not have seen cricket as their sport as well.
Oh, yeah, no, spot on. And in the first innings, he was still playing that polished style, even though it was very hard to be able to hit the ball. In the second innings, he went for a hook shot and it went over his shoulder and was well caught at fine leg. But that happened to some of the really, really good players in the test match, like 20 wickets on day one, 16 on day two. So no wonder down under here, we're all pretty amazed and astonished by what happened. And some of the callers to talk back, Nick, they're saying that this is part of the death of Test cricket, which is really saying something, because there's so much money in white ball cricket in the T20 franchises, and there's about 15 of them all around the world. Tim David, the Australian who plays in the T20 team, he's played for 22 franchises around the world, and he's a multi millionaire for all the money he's receiving. So the young players coming through, like in the nets down at our local club, they'll start to play all these little flip shots and reverse sweeps. I'm going, can you please play straight? And they say, Masterpiece, the money's in the white ball cricket. We have to play our shots. And so cricket is changing, and very rapidly.
It's really interesting you say that, because I know when I was younger, I mean, Test was where it was at, and my grandmother would deride anything else as pyjama cricket, was how she referred to it, if they weren't wearing the whites. But it is interesting. It has changed significantly, even in what's popular in Australia, what's getting the numbers.
Your BBL is still getting terrific ratings, but as I said, for 6 million Aussies to be able to watch day one, I think it was 5 million on day two, people have got an appetite for Test cricket and for England versus Australia. And it's been a contest that's been going on ever since 1877. So the longest Test contest, and you'll like this, Nick, America versus Canada. They also play Test cricket, and that's been going longer than the Ashes. Would you believe that?
I did not know that at all. Who does well out of that? Is it Canada? Tell me it's Canada.
There's a lot of expats who come from the West Indies, play for the Canadian national team. But isn't that a great thing? And see, cricket's truly international, but these are the two creme de la creme teams, along with India, of course. And we really wanted a spectacle. And in Sydney, of course, with, as you allude to, with the weather, it's a bit dodgy, isn't it?
It is.
Let's hope, please, we can get a five-day test match. And let's hope that the members who all line up, I think they open the gates at 8 o'clock, but many of the members from the country, they get there at 5 and 6 a.m. So they call it the Paddington gift, Nick. they line up and then they sprint for the seats. And there's only limited seats in the SCG, you know, in those lovely ladies stand and next to it in the noble stand. So yeah, I'm really hoping it's been such a downer for cricket that this Sydney test can give us everything that we wanted in this last week in Melbourne, but didn't get.
Ken Peace, let's move over to tennis for a bit. And look, we spoke about this earlier in the week, or I did on air, and it's been an interesting one. Where do you stand on that quite astonishing sporting matchup that happened in faraway Dubai earlier in the week, Kyrgios and Sabalenko? Thoughts?
Oh, wow. It's sexism at its worst, something that we've long been rejecting. So Kyrgios now, he's the world number 671. And Arena, of course, she's the world number one women's player. It went to 6-3, 6-3, but Kyrgios's way, of course. Mm. It was all pretty relaxed. And at one stage through the second set, Arena even did a nice little dance. Ronaldo was one of those 17,000, the great soccer star. And so I'm sure that he enjoyed that. But boy, do we really have to do this? Maybe, they've both won more than $12 million in prize money. It's not as if they need the money. I'm a little bit older than you, Nick. I go back to that Battle of the Sexes, yeah, the very first time. Billie Jean King played Bobby Riggs, who had been to Wimbledon and done very, very well. And Bobby Riggs just thought, even Billie Jean King, you know, I'm not going to train, I'm not going to be fit. And he was thrashed by the leading women's player of the day. But again, what's the point? What is the point of this? Kyrgios might say it's part of his lead-up. He's got, as you said, that invitation into the Brisbane International that starts Sunday, day one of the cricket as well. Hopefully he'll play something like the United Cup with his doubles partner and the Kooyong Classic as well. Maybe he'll get a wild card for the Australian Open. But, yeah, you just wonder. And with all respect to Nick, I think even himself would call himself a loose cannon. He hasn't really played serious tennis for 3 or 4 years, albeit through injury. I don't really think, let's hope he doesn't have to repeat this Battle of the Sexes match with Arena.
Well, let's hope not. But, I mean, what do you think he's going to be like come Brisbane International, given that, you know, he's not been necessarily at the peak of his playing game for quite a while now?
Well, as I said, he got down to number 13, yeah, but that was 8-10 years ago. You do hope he can get through, because he's actually won this tournament going back maybe 2017, 2018. So it's going to be compelling tennis, because he brings a crowd, no matter what sort of tennis. But you don't know if he's going to try, or he might try on one point but doesn't try on the next. It's not quite the Australian way. Whereas if we talk about Novak Djokovic, who's now 30, he plays every point like it's his last. And same with some of the past greats, Borg and Yannick, some of these other players, Boris Becker. They're absolute champions. Mats Wilander. They would never play an easy point like Kyrgios. So he hasn't been my favourite, but let's hope he can have a good 2 or 3 weeks and then get a place in the Aussie Open.
All the wildcard spots, Jan 12th is when they should all be filled, is that right?
Yeah, exactly. So there's a cut-off there. So he needs to play well in Brisbane from Sunday and show some form in the United Cup. But what promoter wouldn't include Nick in the draw for round one? You're going to be guaranteed, and maybe they'd even put him on one of the major courts as well, because you're going to be guaranteed a good early crowd there, aren't you?
Ken Pace, we'll run through a few different sports at the moment. What's happening with NBL right now?
Yeah, well, Adelaide are looking good. I've checked the stats. They've won 17 of 21.
Wow.
And they defeated the Perth Wildcats. So that's pretty good. Now, it's a long season, the NBL, but they're the ladder leaders. They defeated Perth 95-84. So they're going really, really well. My favourite team, because the Peace family comes from Tasmania, from Hobart, and the Tasmanian Jack Jumpers, which is a great name, isn't it?
It is.
They defeated the very fast finishing the Southeast Melbourne team just by 3 points a couple of nights ago. And so great to see that happening for the Tassie lads. They're a very, very good team and very well coached. But they're really, in the last 4 or 5 of the ladder, whereas at the business end, you'd think Adelaide are going to go all the way through and really feature in the playoffs in a couple of months' time.
Going back to Sydney Hobart yacht race, I mean, there was some... Yeah. Rough conditions. What was your take on all of that?
It really was, but it all finished at Constitution Dock. Now, I don't know where you've had your best fish that you've ever had of your life, but I bought Travella at Constitution Dock a couple of 3 or 4 Sydney to Hobarts ago, and there was every man and his dog there. But I went to my favourite fish man on the dock, and boy, it was great. It was just fabulous. But on the actual race itself, a Master Lock Comanche won by around about 50 minutes, and it won in something like 2 hours and 5 when it previously won, 7 or 8 years ago. I think it won in something like 1 hour and 1 day and 9. So it was much, much slower. But as you said, it really was a washing machine, and you had in the first day probably a third, if not of not quite half the fleet pulled out just from safety conditions. But the second boat through, another Maxi, of course, was Law Connect. And Ian Thorpe, the champion swimmer, maybe Australia's best ever swimmer, he was on that board. He said that the people of Law Connect, it broke just about every mast, and yet they were able to somehow limp to the line and in second place as well. I know that you like your sportsmen, Nick, but I reckon the yachties, the cyclists, they're amazing. I think they're the two hardiest, most resilient, most courageous set of sportsmen in all of the world. They are amazing because no matter what the conditions in the city of Hobart, you suddenly can't say, well, let's go into Eden for a drop-off and see if the weather conditions improve. They're out there, and as we've seen previously, the high seas, and again, the Bass Strait, it really is tough. So it was a virtual three-man match race there, racing into match the head of the Derwent, but in the end, Comanche, which is a fabulous yacht, pretty new, but really, really very talented, very skilled, got all the latest gizmos that you need. But it was a brutal race, a really brutal race.
The yachties are super tough. I mean, by the end of it, you're sleep deprived, you're exhausted, you're bruised and battered, but you've got your eye on the prize, which apparently is the best fish you're ever going to have once you get there. So that's the main thing. Got to finish the year, Ken, with some of the big sporting achievements of the year. What has stood out to you for 2025?
Well, I was really surprised that Ariane Titmus wouldn't want to go another World Championship or Olympics, but she's 25, and the swimmers also there in that grand final we talked about of the toughest, most resilient sporting people. She's achieved everything that she wanted to achieve, but she is a starlet on and off the in and out of the pool. She's been truly magnificent. So best of wishes to her, and she's going to do the corporate public speaking and motivation. And because she's such a star, like that, her racing with the American Ledecky, it's been just so memorable. So her, that was one of the big highlights for me. I was sorry she was, but really, she's been a champion's champion, long going back a generation or two back. You know, she's like a Dawn Fraser, and Dawny's still around. But the biggest moment for me, it was Jamie Mellum, the jockey, the women's jockey, formerly Jamie Carr. Now, she won the big double, the Caulfield Cup and the Melbourne Cup. And she was on a gelding called Half Yours. It had been 10 years since Michelle Payne had won on Pirates of Penzance. I remember that well because my daughter, Jessie, I've got four daughters, Nick. I'm so lucky. And Jessie put $100 on the nose at 100 to 1. So I tell you what, it was a party that night in the Peace family when Pirates got up. But Jamie's been magnificent because, and she's so resilient. Like we talk about some of the comebacks of the men's sportsmen, but she had this almost, it was such a big fall at Flemington just a couple of years back. She was able to get herself back on her horse 3, 4, 5 months later, and there she is beating the best of the men jockeys from all over the world, and she did it pretty easily at the end. And the Melbourne Cup, and I know that the Everest is huge in Sydney, but the Melbourne Cup is the race that stops a nation. So that was my all-time highlight of 25.
Look, very much so, not only for the race, but as you say, that recovery, that journey to get back there, the incredible effort it would have taken to even start getting back after that fall. I mean, you cannot fault the dedication and the drive.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's champions for a reason. Yeah. Down here in Melbourne, I live right on the beach, so I take my puppies for a walk every day. And there's a boy that played 21 seasons of football of AFL called Robert Harvey, and he won 2 Brownlow medals. And there I was walking with the puppies, and this was draft day, and this was in November. The first game was six months to come, and this big boy was running towards me. And we're mates. We used to play cricket at the same club, and it was Rob. And 6 months out before, and he's running the hills. We've got some big hills around here at Mount Eliza. And he just had a pair of new runners on and white footy shorts. I just said, "G'day, Bob." He said, "G'day, Master." And he kept on going, and he was sweating profusely. But this was after 20 seasons of playing footy, and he's preparing for season number 21. You're not a champion by accident, are you?
You are absolutely not. Ken Pease, always fantastic. I'm looking forward to our next catch-up. Might even make you talk a little Formula One, seeing as we'll be looking down the barrel of the new season. But, mate, thanks for having a bit of time for Nightlife.
All the very best. Thanks so much.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.